This is Rackadix After Hours.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Rack Addicts After Hours episode 3. I'm joined today by the usual Pete with a little bit of a husky voice today. And also Telmo. Andy can't be with us, so we've got a new friend today. Anyone had anything especially exciting happen to them this week, this month? Actually, this month for Telmo, because you haven't been around.
Oh wow, yes, absolutely. There's been a lot of things happening, you know, uni-wise, and I'm really, really glad it's finally finished. 3 weeks now to find.
Oh, you're on holiday?
Yes,
I'm. Oh, lucky man.
On holiday, yes. Yeah, it should be good. Just to put your head down, stop reading books, and maybe enjoy a little bit of a high time. Yeah.
Nice one. So for our listeners, what are you studying at the moment? Where?
So I'm studying music in Brunel University. So it's a very exciting course. There's plenty to go through. It's not necessarily performance or anything like that, but it's a very broad, course. So I'm really glad I'm studying anything from classical music to jazz. So yeah, a lot of electronic music as well, which is something I'm really passionate about.
You don't have to like specialize in an instrument or anything, do you? Just general music.
No. There's everything really. I mean, there's violin players, classical players, to electronic musicians. It's like I said, being a very broad and being involved in a situation where everyone's chipping in, kind of with their own take about music. It's very exciting. Very exciting time for me. Really.
Very diet is good for the health.
Yes.
Nice one. What about you, Pete? Apart from the fact that your voice is running away from you.
Apart from the fact I'm nursing a rather gruff cold. We've adopted a dog.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of foisted on me.
Slightly unwilling, then.
Yes, I'd resisted it for quite a time. I was being threatened with this animal.
Well, actually, I think it's your fault, because I remember you were actually sending pictures to your daughter of dogs that you encountered, saying, "We're not having one of these."
Yes, yes.
It
backfired somewhat. So I arrived home on, I believe it was Sunday evening, was presented with this thing that gave me the doleful eyes, and it was very hard for me to say no back to the cold stable that you were tied up in.
Oh man.
So we have this dog. She's called Maisie.
There is a name, there we go.
Yes, yeah, and it's a very small Jack Russell, and she doesn't make a lot of noise, so I'm quite happy about that, and very low maintenance.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Perfect. We're actually joined by three audience members today. We have one of our colleagues from work, Telmo's other half, and one of Telmo's friends from uni. Anything exciting happened to you this week? If you give me a quick summary, I will say it into the microphone since we can't actually hear you. What do we reckon? Silence in the crowd. What was that?
Sold a house.
Oh, Ben sold a house.
Wow.
Well, that sounds stressful. Have you got the stressful period and now you've escaped?
Stressful couple of months, but keys went across today, and hopefully cash.
A few months, keys handed over, money for Ben. What about you, Inish?
I am counting down my days to go back home for Christmas.
For Christmas. 5 years.
Yes.
Oh man.
Exciting.
Nice one. Telmo going with you.
Times.
Yes. Yeah. We're gonna have a really good time with my family, along with Telmo's family. We're just gonna join together and just make a really nice Christmas dinner.
Can't wait to get smashed on codfish.
codfish?
Yes.
Okay.
Traditional Portuguese codfish.
the more we know.
Are they intoxicating, or is it just...
Yes, they're very, especially they're bathed in wine.
Oh, I see.
Sounds good to me.
Which is not typical, but can be done, especially if you haven't spent Christmas for 5 years.
Amazing. And what about you, kind sir, who I met 5 minutes ago and I instantly forgot your name? I do apologise.
It's fine. Well, last night I went to... So I went to see Hague, the workhouse.
Hague at the workhouse in London, lovely stuff. What kind of genre are we talking?
It's like indie pop.
indie pop rock, the broadest genre in the world. It was a good show.
It was very good. They've got a lot of energy. They're really, really good.
Sounds good.
That
was sick. They've just been rehearsing, but they've got the energy across.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Nice one. Haig is the name.
Yeah.
Are they on the internet?
Yes.
Amazing.
H-A-G-U-E.
Nice.
Make sure
nice.
You follow them. Yeah.
Amazing. We've got a few topics, a little thin on the ground today, but there's actually quite a broad one which we can delve into later. But starting as we did in week one, Behringer, they're at it again. We have a Eurorack case, 104 HP, two rows. Pricing is very vague. We have absolutely no idea. Did it remind you of the Tip Top Mantis, Pete?
To a degree. I mean, it's obviously a steel constructed case.
Oh, is it? It looked plastic on the video. I didn't even
yeah,
I
mean, I'm assuming it's steel. I mean, it could be plastic, but I'm just assuming they're going with the sort of fabrication with their the cases they currently offer.
Wait, they have cases already?
Yes, because you've got the ones that you can get with the their various offerings that go into sort of skiff-friendly cases. So that would be the Neutron case.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But they've
actually
got some bigger ones. So I believe there's a... I'd like to say 104 HP.
That's a standard size, so may well be. I haven't seen
it. Well, 84 is normally the standard, you know, your standard, your sort of Dofer sort of width. So that's quite a wide... 104 is quite a wide case.
It is, yeah. I mean,
it's just a single row of 104.
Yeah, and then they've gone 140 HP on this one.
Times two.
Massive, massive case.
Wow. With power. I'm not sure if they're... the other case they offer has got any power. I just think it's the actual physical.
Oh, okay.
Whereas this is a completely different kettle of fish. It's got your power strips. It's
yeah.
got the case. Does use an external power block rather than...
Most of them do, unless you've got the really big cases where it's like, you know, kettle lead straight in.
Super beefy sort of power supply. And I believe the power strips are zoned. So each zone puts out a certain amount of current. So obviously you'd use your various ways of calculating the current draw on your modular setup to decide how to... But I think it's going to be... Personally think it's going to be another one of these things where Behringer changed the landscape because there are some pricing rumours.
What are they?
Well, the only one I've seen that was written down somewhere was 199 euros.
Okay.
So whether that equates to 199 pounds in
probably
the UK,
somewhere around there.
But I mean, considering what Behringer have done previously, you've got to wonder whether it's going to be even cheaper.
True, and yet we do have, in terms of affordable cases at the moment, there is the Create Audio Nifty, but that comes with modules and it's really, really small. There's the Tip Top Mantis, which is quite well known, but we're talking, I think, £250 to £300 for one of those. That's quite established, you know, trustful manufacturer, I suppose. We'll see how this one goes.
Well, I've always felt that one of the biggest hurdles for anyone entering into the modular scene is acquiring a case. That's always the...
It's always surprisingly expensive for most people.
And it's something that doesn't do anything.
It's boring.
It's a box with a power supply.
Yeah, it's like buying a pedal board with nothing on it.
It was certainly the thing that perturbed me initially when I went into Eurorack. You know, it's that... Sort of, you know, it's a lot, as I say, a lot of expense for not a lot of functionality.
Well, yeah, I bought a power supply and then made a case out of Lego when I started because I couldn't be bothered to spend any more money. I wanted the exciting things.
Yeah, the stuff that works makes noises.
Exactly.
But I think this is going to be a gateway for a lot of people, possibly into modular, because it opens it up, especially if they...
Sounds good to me.
If they can, if, you know, if it goes, you know, even lower than... The 199.
They inevitably do once they've been out for like a month or something. The prices always end up dropping. But then they've also got these modules that they teased ages ago, and then we just heard nothing of. Because I think originally they'd gone like, "Oh, we're gonna do these clones of the old Roland modular," because Roland actually do have their own line of modular stuff. But then Behringer were like, "Oh, no, we're gonna do it as well." But I haven't actually watch the video at all, but they were teasing a multi-mode Moog/Moog style filter.
Look very Moog-esque with the sort of black fascias and the sort of white silver stripes down the edges. So that's going after, is it? I'd like to say AJS.
AJH.
AJH, that's the ones. You know, that's their thing, isn't it? The sort of very Moog esque, and the sort of two colour schemes. You can either have silver or you can have the black.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think again potentially Behringer are going to be upsetting a few people, because you know if they can come to market with perfectly serviceable equipment, because the rightly or wrongly the rumour I've heard is the average price for these modules is around €49.
That is an absolute steal. We've got Dreadbox Chromatic Series, but we're talking about £80 for those. I mean, still a lot more affordable than most of the stuff out there, but still, Behringer coming in with £50. That's pretty cool.
What's your prediction on us actually seeing something tangible?
Who knows? Given how long ago they actually teased the modules originally, I think they might actually be quite close.
So do you think it's a NARM 2020 type of announcement?
Do Behringer do stuff at NARM?
I am not really sure.
I don't remember ever seeing them before. Just on the YouTube videos, that is, anyway.
But that depends on who's doing the videos. And
yeah, true.
I mean, most people that do NARM videos tend to gravitate to the stuff that...
Big brands.
Yeah, or stuff that pertains to their interest.
I'm pretty sure at least they went to the music mess in Germany.
Oh, yeah. Well, so they are Germans. They can't really not do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So I think it's a great move from Behringer, to be fair. I mean, they're already ruling the world. It's just great to see them keeping on the tradition of... which is now a tradition of actually releasing affordable... And getting the modular world to a more affordable market as well.
That's what we've wanted for ages, because it's so Strymon's offering, obviously one of the earlier kind of larger brands to sort of get into modular. Their Magneto, what are we talking about? £500-600 for that module. It's just it's a really good delay kind of loop, the sound on sound kind of machine.
Yeah.
It's £600. There's some really expensive stuff going around to the more entry level. Okay, that's definitely going to be good.
They're almost playing in the sort of doper end of the market, to be honest.
They're going to be, in terms of the doper stuff, it'll be kind of be lower pricing.
Do they have a scene?
Ben is asking a question that I can't hear through my headphones. What was that?
Do they have a scene?
Do Behringer have a scene?
Behringer in Guitar World.
Yeah.
They have a little underground scene where, you know, they turn up on pedal boards because they are cheap pedal boards. But that doesn't mean that the sound's not there. They do it because it's there. We need it. You need it.
Totally. So one of our colleagues, Ben, is just pointing out that a lot of Behringer stuff does kind of creep into people's pedal boards because they might need that one phaser for that one time or something. And then it's super easy, super affordable to grab for one gig when you don't want to really invest. In terms of actually a modular scene or a kind of synth scene, they're really kind of making waves. We've had lots of customers actually just sort of... As soon as the new Behringer thing comes in, they'll end up kind of pre-ordering it. I know I've personally sold Behringer synths to people, and then I look at their account, and they've got the Odyssey, they've got the Neutron, they've got the Model D, they've just got the whole catalogue because it's so affordable.
It's a bit of a cult,
really
good. Isn't it?
I think there is a little bit happening around them. Yeah.
Plus they're producing the synths that people want.
Looking at you, Roland.
Yes, other manufacturers have just ignored, and they've basically seen that there's a gap in the market, and they've gone straight for it.
Yeah, a lot of slightly the left field ones are actually a lot more interesting. Didn't really expect them to do a Wasp, which I think we touched on the first week. That's pretty cool. Then there's the big boys that are going after. I'm really looking forward to that Jupiter 8. We've kind of covered this one in week one. If you want to hear our big old slice on Behringer, go back, listen to our first podcast. There was a big old B-word section in there. Last bit that we can have a really thorough chat about today is gas. We don't have digestive problems. We're talking about gear acquisition syndrome. Oh. This is definitely a massive thing in the guitar world. Telmo, your experiences...
Oh yes. You keep buying stuff and then you sell it because the stuff that you bought is not good enough. I mean, I guess that kind of comes across in every single kind of like instrument world really. specifically for guitar players, because there's so much demand and there's so much to look forward. You know, maybe one reverb is not enough. Maybe you need a second one to get that shimmering on top. It's a real issue, especially if you haven't quite found your sound and if you're constantly looking for the for that you know, for that top of that game that you want to put out there for your recordings, for your live performances. It's a real issue, and I think that most people really cannot stand the fact of maybe less is more. That is something that a lot of people talk about. I mean, I've recently, me personally, started to go into that route, maybe having less equipment that will provide you, even if that equipment is high quality, provide you with a better quality sound, but still keeping the essence of what you want to do, and don't diverge too much. It's tricky from a creative point of view, but I think that most people really struggle to not wanting things.
It's definitely a syndrome that we come across a lot. I mean, I suffer from it badly myself.
Yep,
I understand. But it's some of the stories that I hear from customers, basically. Spoke to a gentleman, again, I think it was last week, and he was telling me that he had 370 guitars.
Wow. Why?
He said that
he certainly has a problem.
Yeah, no, and I mean, one of his major problems is logistics and the insurance, the special insurance
course,
he needed. He had an environment, was climate-controlled storage for it, only one entrance, sprinkler system, alarm system.
Wait, sprinkler system, so in case of fire, he can then ruin his entire collection.
Yeah, I mean, it was a stipulation of the insurers.
But okay, that's a funny word you put in there. It's a collection. Is he a collector or is he an actual musician? Because actual musicians are looking for portability. They're looking for...
practicality.
Yeah, practicality, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. He did say that he did trade in them to some degree, you know, buy and sell.
It's more of an investment.
But he's obviously got a bit more of a problem on the selling side than it seems to be mostly the buying. And it's not unusual. I mean, we all come across people like that. I would say to a degree, the music hardware industry relies on people like that. I mean, obviously, you want a diverse customer base, but there are, you know, there's those stalwarts that come in, as you said with the Behringer earlier, the people that come in and buy everything that Behringer releases.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll get their pre-order in as soon as it's announced, that kind of
thing. And, I mean, this is known. I mean, I've even taken something like Dave Smith. I've even seen interviews with him where he talks about they've got key customers that have every synth they produce.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a as soon as a new synth is announced and they release it, they've got a whole customer base that has to have it straight away. It's just to possess that object, and sometimes it potentially has very little to do with any artistic creation or.
Totally. I mean, the way I got into modular could kind of be a fringe of gear acquisition syndrome, because I'm terrible at writing music. So I discovered the Music Thing Turing Machine, which, if you don't know, is a random looping sequencer. So you give it a clock and it will just generate you a string of random notes, which you can then tune to a scale if you so desire.
The gas thing is certainly a thing in the modular world.
Well, totally. But this one, it's sort of like, this product can solve my issue at being a shit songwriter. We're going to have to bleep that later. I forgot we're trying not to swear in this one. Anyway, so I'm really, really bad at making music. This piece of physical hardware, this product, can solve my needs. To an extent, it has. I've never written a song before, and then I got into modular, and I have an EP turning up at some point. Maybe.
Oh, looking forward to hear
either
that.
Way, it has to some degree solved an issue, but I know there's definitely going to be a lot of people who are going, oh, I just need this one infinitesimal point of my kind of tone, And then I'll make that album. Then I'll actually finally finish recording that song. Then I will write a new tune because this one piece of gear is really inspiring.
Definitely
on the wrong end of that.
There's definitely that psychology where you think that one piece of equipment is going to be life-changing and then you get it and it isn't. And then you look for the next piece of equipment that's going to be life-changing and
there's
so forth.
There's this sense of utopia that you need to reach that sound, you know, that 70s or 80s that you're looking for. It's quite interesting. Most people don't really realize how, for me, personally, like looking to reduce the amount of gear that I have really forced me to work with the guns that I have. I think it would be really interesting to see. In your case, if you're looking for a certain sound and if that you know that's going to be really part of or at least a major part of something that you're going to be doing, then you need to get that, then do it. But don't just end on the loophole that most people end of, that it is, you know, just keep on buying stuff. Oh, no, this chorus is not good enough. I need that chorus. So,
I would totally agree. I mean, I'm certainly far less productive than I was when I had minimal amount of equipment. Yeah. Now I've got ridiculous amounts of equipment. And
the marketing is so good. They sell it so well.
Yeah, you just have to have the latest widget, the latest thing. At what point does it actually turn into an actual problem?
Well, more like something that can be medically diagnosed.
Yeah, I mean, where's the threshold? Where does it stop being sort of a reasonable hobby or interest?
I don't think I know enough about... there we go. That's the sign. We are actually at the pub. They've been emptying their bins into all the glasses. Anyway,
all of them are mine, by the way. So
tell me. it's tricky. I suppose I don't know enough about the kind of classification of any kind of mental illness to know when it's not just a hobby kind of going
it's
out of control, when it's actually some kind of
hoarding.
I mean, there's definitely a growing movement that I personally do definitely subscribe to and want to a little bit more, which is just minimalism in general, not in the art sense, but in just the kind of lifestyle thing. So stripping your possessions back, not even necessarily possessions, but habits, hobbies, even to a certain extent with the slightly more extreme people, the kind of people that you hang out with, but stripping that back to only the things that are either essential or really do bring you happiness. So, for example, a lot of people might say, oh, I've got tons and tons of kitchen equipment. Like, I've got this coffee machine. I've got two different types of blenders for when I want to blend different things. I've got random kitchen gadgets in case I want to mash potatoes. But you can accomplish so much of that with a knife.
Yeah.
So minimalists are going to get rid of all that stuff and keep a really, really nice knife that they appreciate both aesthetically and because of its utility. Doing that, I've been trying to do that with all my music gear recently, so I've gone down from two modular cases to one, which is now not even a full case. I'm just keeping the things that are really inspiring pieces of equipment, for example, Euclidean circles from vpme.de. That's just a Euclidean rhythm generator, really beautiful both in aesthetics and it's just so easy to use. Mm. And certain filters that I think sound amazing. Just keeping that and trying to be inspired by the limitations of what you have. That's how I've made music, is really digging the tiniest amount of interest out of really minimal equipment. That's where it's actually worked for me.
Yeah, and also reutilize, because there's a lot of vintage gear out there that's not that expensive. You can find a lot of stuff from the late 80s, early 90s. Like in my case, I've got this micro rack, this 1987.
The Boss half rack stuff.
Yes,
so cool.
It's incredible. I mean, when I've tried it at first, people are like, oh, just, you know, it's lo-fi, it's a bit glitchy, it's a bit weird. Plugged it in, sounds great, it's part of my sound. And, you know, it's not even that expensive. I spend, like, maybe, what, 70 quid on that? So, and it's just all the reverb and delay that I need. So, and it's all in there. So, you know, just stick to your guns, guys. And
The other extreme, obviously, is the people who actually buy the stuff and don't use it at all.
Yeah,
and
such a waste.
I'm certainly aware, I'm sure that happens in the guitar world. It certainly happens in modular. I've certainly heard plenty of stories of people who buy Murak modular equipment and no other intention other than just collecting it.
Why?
Filling a
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That empty corner in a pedal board or that one space in a rack, yeah, I guess that's quite a powerful draw for a lot of people.
Certainly
well.
What happened to me, you get the case, you put some modules in the case, there's all these holes, you've got to fill the holes. You fill the holes, you need a bigger case.
Yeah.
Get a bigger case, you've got holes again.
And the biggest thing with me when I filled a really big classic board was that when I looked down the board, I programmed it great, but all I was looking at was dollar signs on eBay.
That's fair enough. You're just looking at the monetary value of the stuff you've collected and how many times you reckon you use each individual thing a year. I mean, if you're...
You can make a living out of it, I suppose. You know, it's yeah. It's a way of...
A lot of people do just sell things on eBay. That's yeah. actually a kind of a, yeah, they a
just
sad career.
Use it, resell it.
Yeah.
This is most probably the... Possibly the correct. It depends on the sort of how much sort of capital loss that you're going to make.
If the one in, one out. If you lose money, but you do enjoy it while you have it, and you get everything out of it, that's definitely a fair way to go. And keep the gear from just accumulating infinitely.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a case of I hope there will be someone out there that can look after consumerism problems. And you know, this goes for everything. People that have too many clothes, people that have, you know, maybe two cars that you don't need. This is something that, you know, in this 21st century modern world, we should really maybe, you know, get professionals.
What is it? Tidying Up with Marie Kondo or something, the series on Netflix.
Exactly.
This does not spark joy.
There you go.
It's just hug your clothes. Thank you for being a part of my life. Thank
Hold
you.
And pray for it.
Thank you, Strymon Equipment.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
You were great. Goodbye.
I've done that to my trousers, to be fair.
Oh, yep. Well, you've given your trousers a little hug.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you for all the times
they
you saved your ass
love.
From being cold.
Yes. Yes.
Hmm?
He gave his trousers a funeral.
Do you actually give your trousers a funeral?
I did,
what?
I did. Oh, thank you for putting that through. It makes me feel so much better now.
Amazing. Yeah. Would you rip a hole in them when you had to say goodbye?
I've
Is it an emotional moment?
A couple of candles, you know, you got to make the thing proper.
little totem to the items of gear that we left behind.
Yes.
But there's definitely something to be said for stripping back your life, you know, beyond even just... but it's having the nerve to actually do it.
It's got to be a conscious effort, but you can save money and just reclaim kind of time, really. Just kind of enjoy what you have have all these extra things to maintain.
Yeah. What I also find with having excesses of equipment is it's actually quite stressful.
Mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's visual clutter as well.
Yeah, that stresses. Yeah, the clutter stresses you out, but the actual... Just the act of owning it, you have a responsibility. It's got a value, and you know, it's something to worry about. If you don't have
yes,
the stuff,
what,
you don't.
What
need
Ben said, it's dollar signs on a pedal board. That's just having that. You.
Yes,
what you own owns you. Words of wisdom from Ben over there.
Thank you for that, Ben. Thank you.
Any more to say on gear acquisition syndrome other than we wish none of us were affected by it?
Oh wow. No, I mean, that's, I think, it's pretty much put through the way that we, that there's definitely ways that we can get through it. Guys, we're all here. We're all here for each other. Let's, you know, just stick to each other. And if you really don't want that Eurorack, you know, I'll buy it. So.
Right, so I think with my fading vocal cords and so forth, we'll mostly call it a short one.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Well, tune in next week. We'll be in the same bad place, same bad time. Well, I don't know how people do that phrase. But thank you for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. We will see you later. Have a good one.